Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to take a look at lead. Lead from ammunition and fishing tackle causing problems for our wildlife and especially our birds. And we're going to talk about that problem and some other things as well with our guest, Mark Naniot. Mark is the director of rehabilitation at the group Wildlife Instincts, located in Eau Claire. He's a certified wildlife rehabilitator instructor. He's been working with orphaned and injured wildlife for almost 40 years, so he knows a lot, and I know you're going to enjoy talking with him. What would you like to know about helping wildlife with lead poisoning? Do you have questions about what to do if you find an animal that's sick or injured? You can join in at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Mark Naniot, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thanks, Larry. Appreciate you having us on.
Let's talk about Wildlife Instincts first. What kind of rehab work do you do there? Give us a little history.
Okay. Well, one thing I'll correct you on is we're not in the Eau Claire area. We're in the Rhinelander area.
Oh, I'm sorry.
North. That's fine. No problem. And so Wild Instincts, we've been in business for a little over 12 years, but we've been doing rehab in the Northwoods for over 25 years. And so what we do is take care of injured and orphan animals of all types that are rehabable by state and federal regulation, everything from mice to bears, hummingbirds to eagles, and everything in between. And so this last year, we took care of 1,306 animals from 118 different species. And so typically we do anywhere up 125 different species and over 1,000 animals. And we deal with a pretty big geographic area. Last year, we took care of animals from 38 different counties. But most years, we probably average 40, 45 different counties that we take animals from.
Yeah, I suppose maybe the pandemic had some effect on your number of counties reached, perhaps, or maybe it did it have some other impact?
Yeah, it had a lot of impacts in a lot of different ways. Some of it were certain species we weren't able to rehabilitate. The DNR has put a ban on certain species that we can't rehabilitate anymore until COVID goes away. Also, cost of things, availability of things. Some rehab centers either closed down or lowered their numbers. And so we ended up getting in a lot more animals from a lot of different areas that we didn't normally get them from.
Yeah. And lots of rehab sites are reporting an increase in animals needing their help. Are you kind of seeing that same thing? Or
we definitely are. And we've seen it go up every year since we've been in business. Every year we set a new record as far as admissions. But yeah, definitely, with COVID and a lot of people being at home, not being at work, they probably come in more animal interactions. And so we get in more animals oftentimes just because of COVID and people being home and, coming across animals more often.
Yeah, I imagine. And one of the problems you deal with a lot at your clinic is lead poisoning. And I was on site looking at your site and seeing some of the great photos and so forth of lead poisoning. I mean, they're good photos, but they're a bad circumstance. Let's put it that way. Describe what it looks like in an animal.
Typically, the most common ones we see it in is bald eagles, but we also see it in swans, geese, turkey vultures, loons. They're the most common ones that we see lead poisoning with. And what you generally see is the animal is looking kind of lethargic. It might just be in your yard, not really doing too much. Sometimes they'll be having seizures. Sometimes they'll be regurgitating this really gross, nasty green goo. And a lot of times their droppings look the same way. It comes out really greenish. And it's kind of a sign of liver impairment and dehydration. So that's, very common what we see.
Yeah. And there are ways... Sometimes there are ways that you can treat and help those animals.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So when they are admitted to our facility, we do an x-ray first to see if there's any lead still in the system, be it lead shot pellets, jigs or sinkers, anything like that. And then we also have a lead analyzer. And so what we do is a blood draw. It takes us 3 minutes to get our results back. And then we know whether or not that animal has lead. And we carry the chemical that can be used for what they call chelating to remove the lead from the system. And we carry that on hand. And so within 3.5 minutes, we can be treating that animal.
Wow, that is amazing. And when you think about the cost, I was really struck by the cost of just treating one bird, for example. I think you had a swan up on your site, might have been.
Right.
And the cost is so, just go through what it costs.
Well, not only the care itself, but the chelating, just to do the lead test, it's about $18 per test. So you do the test. The current swan that we have right now, when we did a radiograph and x-ray when it came in, we could count at least 18 different pellets and particles in its stomach. And so unfortunately, doing that surgically to remove that is not, it's very risky. And so generally what you have to do is wait till the body basically just digests those particles. And of course, it's shedding lead that entire time. So you're chelating this entire time. Many of them get very sickly, so you have to tube feed. The chelating agent takes out a lot of good things as well as bad things. It'll take out copper and zinc, the necessary things that we need in our bodies. So we have to do a lot of replacement. And so not just the chemical, the specialized food, the vitamins, the testing, the particular swan that we have right now, we've already tested him 5 times for lead. And like I said, it's about $18 a test each time we test him. And we're going to be testing him again tomorrow. So he'll have his 6th test tomorrow. And so a lot of different ways, you know, not including, like I said, the general food, the bedding, everything else that goes along with it.
And you add it all up and it's quite a bit of money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when you consider, say last year we did 1,306 animals, if one or two of those animals even, get to be $1,000 or more, gets to be a lot of money by the end of the year.
So, yeah, absolutely. And how do you think this swan picked up all of that lead?
For many years, they allowed lead pellets or lead shot for duck hunting. And so, of course, everybody would hunt over lakes, rivers, streams, things like that for ducks. They would shoot at the duck. The lead pellets would settle down into the mud and the marshes and things. And so when these swans are feeding, they're kind of probing in the mud for bugs and tubers and things like that, different vegetation. And they also pick up little rocks to help grind up food in their crop or gizzard. And of course, so they pick up these spent shot pellets that have been laying in the lake bottoms for years. And all it takes is a couple little microscopic particles to cause lead poisoning. And like I said, this particular swan had 18 that we could count.
Man, that is, that's amazing. And there, you know, when you think about it, all those years of that lead shot landing, and it's going to take, well, is it ever going to be gone?
It probably never will be gone. So, of course, you look at different things. When you see some of these trap shooting leagues, they shoot over water. And, of course, what happens there, and they don't have any restrictions. They eliminated lead shot for duck hunting back in the 80s. But as far as trap shooting goes, they still allow lead. And many of these trap shooting places will shoot over ponds or lakes. And you see ducks swimming around there. So they're obviously picking up this lead, and it's going through the food chain as well.
Oh, so... what can we do to reduce lead in the wild?
The biggest thing is to stop using it. There's safer alternatives out there, and nobody likes to hear the word regulations, and they think we're anti-hunting, things like that, but it has really nothing to do with that. What we want to do is make it safer. And so there's alternatives for hunting and fishing equipment. There's steel shot for gun hunting, for shotguns. There's these new copper bullets now that don't have lead core. And that makes it safer also when you're hunting deer, because a lot of the eagles will feed on those carcasses or the gut piles. And the other thing is there's a lot of tungsten and different things that are available for sinkers and jig heads and things like that for fishing. So there are safer alternatives out there.
Yeah. And so the lead primarily, is it coming from anywhere? Kenneth in Janesville wondered about where is it coming from and what's being done to stop it. And I think you've kind of covered a lot of that.
Some of it. And then also, if you look back in our history, we used to use leaded paint. And so that's been eliminated or, outlawed for many, many years. But of course, there's probably still some old homes and things that still have lead paint. The other thing is we used to use lead in our gasoline. So I'm sure you're probably young enough to remember leaded gasoline in your day.
Oh, yeah.
And so, basically, the fuel would be burned by the vehicle and the lead would kind of seep into the ditches and things like that where the vegetation would take it up and the deer would eat it. And so they would get lead in their system. Eagle eats a roadkill deer and would get lead in its system. So we eliminated lead in our gasoline. We eliminated lead in our paint. And so now what we would like to see is, you know, lead eliminated in hunting and fishing equipment. And like you said, it'll take many, many years for those shot pellets in those lakes to either go down deep into the soil, and it may never happen. So we will probably always have some issues of lead.
Yeah, and maybe it'll happen for some lakes and not in others. It depends on the sedimentation that goes on in the lakes, for sure. Well, there's a lot more we can talk about relating to this, and we have some other questions from our listeners. But you can join in, too. I hope you will, with your own questions as we talk wildlife rehabilitation. We've zeroed in on lead poisoning a bit here, but we can take other questions as well. The numbers 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. We are going to take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with Mark Naniot, Director of Rehabilitation at Wildlife Instincts in Rhinelander. He's a certified wildlife rehabilitator and instructor. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at wildlife rehabilitation on the show today, Larry Mueller here with my guest, Mark Naniot. Mark is Director of Rehabilitation at Wild Instincts in Rhinelander and a certified wildlife rehabilitator and instructor. So what would you like to know about helping wildlife? Join in the conversation. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Great to talk with Mark. And his, again, if I mispronounced, I want to remind you that the name of his organization is Wild Instincts. If I've been pronouncing it wrong, let's say, make sure I get it right here and call it Wild Instincts, not Wildlife Instincts. So Wild Instincts is the place to turn. And emailing, by the way, at ideas@wpr.org is a good thing to do as well. A listener, Susie in Pewaukee, called and couldn't stay on. She'd like to know what she can do with old lead ammo and sinkers. Can it be recycled?
Absolutely. So you can usually take it to your local landfill. That's one of the places. Oftentimes, a lot of the DNR offices will have collection sites for that, so they can turn it into batteries or whatever else. But yeah, lead is very recyclable. So it's definitely something that you can bring it into either a county landfill and a lot of the DNR offices as well.
All right. And another listener emailed saying it's almost impossible to find unleaded fishing tackle and deer ammo in sporting goods stores or online these days. Anything that could be done to address this problem?
Well, we've had an ammunition shortage now for several years, and yes, I definitely understand that. It is definitely harder to find. The biggest thing would be to try to do it early, like start right now trying to find your ammunition for this fall before the deer season comes along. Usually people don't start thinking about it till, you know, September, October, and by that time everybody else is doing the same thing, and it's hard to find. Definitely fishing equipment is much more difficult. If you go into Walmart or a sport shop, you'll have two or three aisles of the lead stuff, and you'll have a very small 2-foot by 2-foot section of the non-leaded. So it's just a matter of being diligent, trying to find it online or find it in your local sporting goods stores. Maybe a little bit more difficult. And I know with the ammunition shortage right now, it's very difficult to find, but just a matter of trying to do it early. And it is a little bit more expensive, but for the lives that we save of the animals, and it's not just the eagles and things, people don't realize all the animals that are affected by that lead that's left behind in that carcass. But just doing your due diligence, trying to do shop around and see what you can do to find it.
Let's take some calls. Dave in Neillsville, we go to you now. Thanks for calling, Dave. What's on your mind?
Well, thanks for taking my call. I have two certifications from the Wisconsin DNR. One is a hunter safety instructor, and one is an advanced shotgun instructor. for years, I've been teaching about using non-toxic lead in all hunting. And I've been mentioning in my classes for all 16 years or so. Yes. So we're trying to get rid of it.
Well, Dave, thanks for doing that. And thanks for calling. And I we need a lot of people like Dave out there doing the instruction. I think, Mark.
Absolutely. Thanks, Dave. Yeah. We appreciate everybody spreading the word. We've been doing it for many, many years, and a lot of people think, they've never heard about it. We do a program and they say, I've never heard about that before. And so it's a matter of creating awareness. Some of it's a little difficult because the eagle population, for example, right now is higher than it's ever been in this area. So people remember when they were younger, maybe some of the people that are in their 60s and 70s, the old DDT age, and say, well, gee, it was a treat for me to see an eagle when I was a kid. Hardly ever saw one. Now there's eagles everywhere, so that lead really can't be a problem. But I always tell those folks they've never had one die in their hands, and I've had many die in my hands from lead poisoning. So it is real, and all the education and all the help we can get spreading the word out there is much appreciated.
Michael in Wauwatosa, we'll go to you next. Hi, Michael. Thanks for calling.
Hi, good afternoon. I just want to say this: the use of lead in hunting has been a point of contention of mine for a long time. We have banned lead from gasoline, from paint, and almost every other application in society. I just don't understand why it hasn't been banned in the use of ammunition. And also, I wanted to say that I lease property in north central Wisconsin to deer hunters, and I write right into the lease that they shall not use any lead loads when hunting on that property. And I reserve the right to inspect their ammunition and will terminate the lease without refund if they use lead shot on my property.
Another good idea. But, Michael, what about the – why isn't it banned?
Yeah, that's a very good question. A lot of it goes back into politics. Same thing when we switched to unleaded gas. There was a lot of, problems with that. A lot of people didn't want it. Right now, sometimes people think of it as gun regulation, taking away some of their rights. And it's not really about that. It's about safety of the environment. But a lot of people haven't read the literature. They don't really know about it. And I think that's, why we're having some of the people that don't want to switch over. And I appreciate Michael doing that. I mean, that's a huge help. And if more people would do things like that, maybe we can get it off the shelves and, have more better things available to purchase for hunters and fishers.
And the DNR has a video that I've watched that shows how lead spreads into a system when it's shot into a body. In this case, they use something that is like a body, but you can visually, you can see. And so people who actually use a lead bullet cleaning, taking care of their deer, for example, wind up ingesting or with a good possibility of ingesting lead themselves.
Absolutely. We have one good photo that we have on one of our presentations that we do where somebody did an x-ray of a deer carcass that was shot with a 7mm mag rifle. And you can count 547 particles that you can see, because what happens when that bullet expands, it almost vaporizes. And all these little tiny particles, they can go up into 8 inches in diameter from the wound site. And so, of course, it's through the heart, the lungs, all the guts and things that most people don't keep. So when they gut the animal out, they leave that gut pile out there. And the eagles and crows and ravens and turkey vultures are very good about finding those. And so they consume those little particles. And what you also don't consider is it's woodpeckers and chickadees and blue jays, they're all picking up, that shot pieces as well from those carcasses. A lot of people like to hang their deer out after they butchered it up for the woodpeckers and the critters to feed on. Well, a lot of those carcasses are contaminated with lead particles. So all those birds that come to your feeder and are feeding off of that carcass, be it chickadees and woodpeckers, they can be ingesting that and dying from it as well. They're much less noticeable than the large eagles, but they're getting it just as well.
And birds are the kind of your biggest problem, do you think?
They are. So birds are much more susceptible to lead than what mammals are. But check with the people in Flint, Michigan, if you think it's not a problem for humans. And so we're doing the same thing. We also have a photo that we use. There's a process called high image tomography, which is like a computer generated X-ray. And there was a food pantry in North Dakota that was getting a bunch of venison hamburger donated that they were giving out to the public, and heard about the lead situation. So they wanted to see if any of theirs was contaminated with lead. So they X-rayed or did this high image tomography with their computer. And basically the hamburger that they were giving out to people was glowing. It was full of lead. And so if you read the regulations from the Wisconsin DNR now, they actually have lead exposure warnings in there about consuming lead, you know, contaminated animals.
Mark Naniot, our guest. Mark, what, I mean, we can continue to talk about lead, of course, but what are some other problems that you see maybe at this time of year when it comes to wildlife rehab?
You name it, and things change every year. Of course, we get diseases coming through, be it West Nile virus. Of course, now we have COVID, and that's one thing that's changed some different things in a lot of different ways. There's certain species they don't allow us to rehab in the state of Wisconsin right now because of COVID. Anything in the cat family, anything in the weasel family. And so, you know, chronic wasting disease, there's all sorts of different things that affect wildlife rehab at all times. Weather conditions, we've got a big cold snap coming up, and that affects a lot of the animals as well.
What advice do you have for anyone who has found a sick or injured animal?
Best thing would be to give, you know, us or your nearest rehab center a call. We take calls 24/7, 365. And so we're always available for animal intakes or giving advice over the phone. Doesn't matter. I mean, we get calls from all over the United States. So it doesn't matter if you're local or not local. We're still happy to talk you through the situation and try to get you some help. But that's the best thing to do is call some, you know, somebody who knows what the situation is and see if we can do the right by the animal.
And DNR, I think, has a list on its website of wildlife, certified wildlife rehabilitators like Wild Instincts, your organization. What's your organization's number?
715-362-WILD or 9453.
715-362-9453 or 362-WILD. All right.
Right.
Maybe you'll get some calls, more calls on that, maybe more than you want here. I know finding a qualified clinic is not all that difficult, and people should really look for maybe the ones closest to them. But have you had a lot of unusual animals that you have taken care of over time?
Well, basically anything that's native to the state of Wisconsin, we have probably cared for it. Like I said, we average probably around 120 different species per year. And we do just about everything you can imagine.
Somebody else was wondering about these jigs and sinkers. What are there substitutes for, like the lead sinker or the lead head jig?
I think tungsten is the main one that they use, but there are some others as well. I know we have the World Championship Olympic ice fishing team here. They've all switched over to tungsten and using different things rather than lead and trying to propagate that among everybody else as well and try to spread that word also.
A man called to mention that all the ranges he's visited in Dane County recover the ammunition used there, and it's so much easier to use lead shot for practice.
It is. And for the most part, as long as you have the proper type of an area where it's not going to get into a water system or someplace where the animals can pick it up, it's cheaper for sure, but not necessarily safer. You know, you can never say that it's a safe situation because anytime an animal could potentially get into it, even if it was a sandhill crane that was kind of probing in the soil for bugs and worms and things like that, they could pick up shot pellets also. So you can never say it's necessarily safe. Unfortunately, it's been the cheapest way to go for many, many years. And if we start switching over to something else, the price should hopefully come down and not be as big of an issue.
Yeah. How do you become a wildlife rehabilitator?
There's a few steps in Wisconsin, and in order to care for animals, wild animals, you have to be a licensed rehabilitator. And so some of the things that we have to go to, When you first start out, you have to have a facility inspection. You have to have all the proper facilities. You have to have a veterinarian that is willing to see any of your patients that are above and beyond your skill set. You have to be sponsored by a advanced rehabilitator. And like I say, an inspection from the DNR. And willing to work long hours for not much pay.
And what kind of education does the wildlife rehabilitator himself or herself go through to get that designation?
Well, some people do it just by volunteering. There is no actual school for wildlife rehabilitation for the most part. So there are a lot of classes that can be helpful: biology, wildlife, comparative anatomy. So there are many things that are helpful, but there's really not too much there for the actual care of the animals. So if somebody wanted to be a wildlife rehabilitator, the best way is to start volunteering at a center, do some shadowing at a vet clinic, because we have to know not only the care as far as the proper feeding and foods for the different animals, we also have to know the medical side also. So there's a lot involved with it.
Yeah, I would really think so. But there also have to be a fair amount of satisfaction associated with it.
Tremendous amount. I've been doing it since I was 5 years old, and I would never want to do anything else. So to see that animal, you know, get released and have that second chance back at life, it really makes your heart happy.
Yeah. Where does the funding for your clinic come from, for example?
We don't get anything from state, federal, or county, so it's whatever funds that we can raise. We're a 501c3 not-for-profit, and so we do fundraisers. We have memberships. Basically go out and do all sorts of programs, educational programs, and take donations and memberships from the public.
Cal in Sugar Camp called, couldn't stay online, but wanted to mention that Wild Instincts has a great display of photos at their location and encourages folks to go over and see it. And while they're there, make a donation.
Thank you. Yeah, that's great. And right now, because of COVID, our building is still closed down. So we are not allowing visitors simply because of the COVID regulations. We have certain animals that we are still allowed to take care of, but a lot of precautions that we have to take. And so we're being very careful. You know, we lost a lot of our volunteers and things also, but we're still very careful that way.
So lots there. And is there, aside from dollars, are there other ways that people can help the clinic?
Absolutely. We have a wish list on our website as far as the main things we need. And we also have a wish list on Amazon. So if somebody wanted to go to Amazon, they can type in Wild Instincts wish list and they can pick out items right from our wish list. We've got a link on that on our website also. But then that way they can see some of the things we need. They don't have to wonder what it is. They can just click a button. And if they do Amazon Smile, one nice thing about Amazon Smile is they will contribute a portion of your purchase to Wild Instincts. And it doesn't cost you anything at all.
And give us an example or a couple of examples, perhaps, of what might be on that wish list.
Well, on the Amazon wish list, we have anything on there from dog, you know, canned dog food, paper towels, some different filters and pumps that we use for some of our aquatic cages. The list goes on and on and on, even office paper, SD cards, different things for our cameras. You name it, it's a very big list that we have. Otherwise, if people just want to have some old stuff that are laying around the house, we use a ton of sheets and blankets and towels, dish soap, sponges and scrubbies. You name it, there's a million things that we can use.
Yeah, and it sounds like over a broad range of cost, or so it could fit most people's budgets one way or another.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, we have things on our Amazon wish list from $6 or $7 all the way up to several hundred.
Gordy in Mosinee, let's go to you now. Gordy, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I've been wondering if you get any animals in there that are refugees from hound hunting, like bobcats, coyotes, bear cubs. And, you know, when people send their hounds through miles of woods with their radio-controlled collars, they just go after everything in front of them. So that's my question.
Okay. We've had certain situations where animals have come in, you know, in contact with hounds, you know, some incidental type situations. For the most part, they allow the training of bears for hound hunting starting in July 1st. And normally by that point, the bear cubs are old enough to be on their own. They generally will reunite with the mother, but they don't necessarily have to at that point. They can survive without her. But we don't see a lot of situations like that, but we do see occasional ones.
A listener emailed to say that they see some people who still feed corn to deer through the winter. Does this lead to poor nutrition or potential starvation?
It kind of depends on the situation. There's kind of a special enzyme that deer need to be able to break down corn in their system. If they've never been fed corn before and you start feeding corn in the middle of the winter, that can be a bad situation because they don't really have the enzymes to break it down. And if they've been feeding corn all along, that's a different story because the deer will get those enzymes to be able to break it down. It's not the most nutritious food, but it's not terrible. And also, of course, check your regulations to make sure you're in an area where they allow the feeding. Many of the chronic wasting disease zones don't allow the feeding of deer. So we want to make sure that people are being legal as well.
As thinking of chronic wasting disease in deer, have you had occasion at Wild Instincts to deal with that sort of thing?
We have not. For the most part, wildlife rehabilitators don't really deal much with adult deer. They've never really found fawns that carry chronic wasting disease at that age. So they either don't get it yet or it takes time to develop in their system. But we've never really seen it in the fawns, and that's mostly what we deal with. Adult deer are so high stress. You know, we have situations where a deer might have an arrow or is hit by a car, and everybody wants us to help it. But the problem is they're so high stress, they will literally bash themselves to death in captivity, and it makes matters worse. So trying to deal with the adult deer is almost impossible. And so we have not had a situation of chronic wasting disease that we have dealt with yet.
What someone also wondered about successes or your success rate. How do you do, I guess, is the question.
Sure. The national average for wildlife rehabilitators across the United States is 50 to 55%. Ours is normally anywhere from 65 to slightly over 70. And so we work very, very hard to, you know, do our best to be able to get these animals back out into the wild. So we're a little bit above the national average.
Yeah, that's pretty darn good. And how do people, for Wild Instinct, can you give the address, the online address where people could go take a look at Wild Instincts and maybe find a way to help out?
Sure. It's wildinstinctsrehab.com. And so our website is available that way. We've got some blogs and things. If anybody wants to learn more about lead poisoning, we have a lot of information up there on lead poisoning and some different links to different articles and things that are out there about lead poisoning, some of our blog posts that we've done over the past as well, and cover a lot of different topics.
And give that once more, that address.
WildInstinctsRehab.com.
WildInstinctsRehab.com. Mark, it was a pleasure talking with you today. I hope we have a chance to do it again. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. We'd be happy to anytime. Take care.
Mark Daniot is Director of Rehabilitation at Wild Instincts in Rhinelander. Great to have him with us. And great to have you listening in as well. And I hope you'll tune in tomorrow. Mary Mellum is back to answer all your tax return questions. And in the meantime, I hope you'll stay with us right through the afternoon. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.